I'm going to call the Health and Human Services Conference Committee to order. Just a few housekeeping measures. This morning we're going to hear from the health-related boards, the licensing boards. We mentioned yesterday that there's some work that needs to be done on both bodies there, so we're going to hear from the boards on the request that they did. This is work that we can do without having a global target, because it's all special revenue funds that won't affect our bottom line in terms of the general fund target that we're still waiting on, so that's a good time to do some of that work. We will plan to meet today until 10 a.m., at which time the House needs to go into session, is my understanding. The plan is to recess at that point until approximately 6 p.m., at which time we'll come back together. I don't know if we'll be done with the boards yet, but we can finish that up. We would like to start stepping through. Article 1 has a lot of the ACA conformity that the governor, the House, and the Senate are all in line with, as well as the ACA maintenance of effort requirements. We're all same and similar, and we can probably work through some of that with little controversy, adopt some of those measures, and understand some of the differences between them. If there are any, and that's probably as far as we'll be able to make it today. During the recess, sergeants have instructed us that no one is to leave anything in this room. Everybody has to, in the audience, everybody has to take their stuff with them. Members and staff, our things will be picked up and put on carts, of course, and returned to the conference committee as we go. But no paper, no bags. Everything in the audience has to be cleared out of the room when we're done. So with that, we'll start with the health boards. And I'm not sure who wants to come up and try to step us through. Welcome to the committee. State your name for the record.
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And members of the committee, my name is Dr. Larry Spicer. I am the executive director of the Minnesota Board of Chiropractic Examiners. And while I would not, I'm speaking here primarily for the Board of Chiropractic, but for the purposes of efficiency here, I would make a couple of points that are common to all of the 17 health-related licensing boards. And I'll be very brief, because I know your time is limited. First of all, I would like to point out, just remind the committee that last year the Sunset Committee convened and did a fairly, well, actually quite a detailed review of all the health-related licensing boards and came out with an extremely positive review for these boards with respect to their fiscal management as well as their outcomes. The second point that I would like to make is that the appropriation requests that you are looking at today would not require any fee increases for any of the boards whatsoever. And the third point that I would like to make is that the boards do not receive any fees at all from the general fund. All of their income is derived directly from fees, and that goes into the special revenue fund. And the fourth thing that I would like to point out is that all of these appropriation requests have been originally vetted through each of the individual boards, and so therefore they are overseen by the board members of these individual boards. So those are the issues that are common to all of the health-related licensing boards. I would be glad then to speak to or answer any questions with regard to my specific request, that is the request for the Board of Chiropractic Examiners. And I don't know if you want me to speak to them generally or if you would just like to forward questions.
Well, Dr. Spicer, you mentioned that in order to do this entire package, it would not require additional fees. Is that for the current biennium, or is this a sustainable package over time? There would be no additional fees imposed throughout time. In order to support this into the future as well, or is there?
Well, I can speak to that for my board. It would not require any fees. I'm not sure if I can speak to that. 2017. I'm getting a signal that there might be some fee increases in 2017.
Okay. Do you know on which board that might come from?
No, but my guess is that will be brought up today during individual testimonies.
Okay. Any other general questions of members? Representative Abler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Dr. Spicer's, I agree with this testimony that the boards are pretty careful of how they spend their money and that this is, I usually go along with what they want to try to do. I do hope we hear from each individual board at least briefly, because this was never heard in the House, and just for the interest of the public to know what we're going to approve or not approve. And I do hope they tell us if it needs a fee increase, and that makes me nervous on those requests. So just so people know my bent on this. So thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Abler, we all want to pay close attention to where the fee increases might occur. Representative Liebling.
Thank you, Senator Lurie, and members. And if I could just add to that, it would be helpful to know if there are FTEs in each of these requests.
Members do have about a 50-page explanation of change items put together by the board in their packets. I think there's ones available for the public as well. And they do specify in here exactly where there are FTEs. It's fairly lengthy to accommodate, but in the tables you can see the FTEs. Maybe do you have a Dr. Spicer, do you have a list of FTEs compiled that would be easier for members to
I don't, Mr. Chair and Representative Liebling. No, I don't have a list of those. I will point out that in the Board of Chiropractic, one of the requests is for administrative staff. Now, that is actually a very short part-time annual position. It's actually a full-time but short-term position that occurs typically right around November and December of each calendar year, and that is specifically for the purposes of facilitating and assisting us in license renewals, which is our most difficult time of the year because all of our renewals and registrations occur at that time of the year. So we would bring in a part-time staff to help with that, and then they're gone about the third week of January. We used that this year as an experiment, and it was extremely successful.
Any further questions of members? Okay. Did you want to present anything more on the chiropractic board specifically?
I can very quickly point these out. As I mentioned a moment ago, the Sunset Commission was quite impressed with the efficiencies of the board, but we're always looking for additional efficiencies and ways to make things even better. And so you notice that we have a lean evaluation request there. That's a request for a facilitator to come in and look at each of our individual processes to determine if there are areas that we can become even more efficient. That's the purpose for that. And as far as the iPads are concerned, we are doing that for the purposes of reducing paper usage and mailing. Our mailing costs us, for the purposes of our complaint resolution issues, our mailing costs us several thousand dollars a year. And if we have a contested case, that can be tripled or quadrupled. The intent here is to be able to move things for the board members to iPads that they can use for their efficiencies, and we send out less mail and stuff. So beyond that, I'd be glad to stand for any questions.
Any further questions in regards to the Board of Chiropractors? Seeing none, I know that a couple of the other boards, the Board of Dentistry is in charge of the HPSP piece, and that has effects across the boards. And then I think the Board of Nursing Home Administrators has the Administrative Services Unit. Is that correct? That has effects across the entirety of the board. So maybe we can hear from each of you about the board-wide implications of the requests.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee.
Mr. Schrag, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Marshall Schrag. I'm the executive director of the State Board of Dentistry. There is, as Senator Lurie indicated, a 50-page packet that summarizes each of the supplemental budget requests that we had submitted. The Board of Dentistry begins on page 5 of that, and I can walk you through that briefly, but in response to the primary questions that you had, the Board of Dentistry increase looks at a 6/10 FTE increase. for our board, and I'll speak to HPSP as well. The other question is with regard to fee increases, and as Dr. Spicer indicated, there are no fee increases that would be needed in order to fund these requests. The requests that we have, the first one begins with a staff salary adjustment, and that was just anticipating the negotiated increases and the difficulty of the board in absorbing those increased staff salaries and the benefits that go with them. And so we've requested, as you see, the $20,000 in the first year of the biennium and $38,000 in the second. The second request is the 6/10 staff member, the FTE, and the Board of Dentistry over the course of the last several years has had an increasing responsibility for regulating additional dental professionals, and those increases.
Mr. Schrag, that last item that you were talking about, how does that relate to the House's proposal for a 1% base?
Actually,
this proposal
or request did not anticipate that, and so that would help offset some of those dollars, right? So
those would be overlapping in some regards.
Correct.
Okay.
Yep, they would, and I think what I want to indicate is each of these six requests for the Board of Dentistry is that. They were submitted at the time as being things that the board determined that it needed, and I believe that at this point in time, there's some discretion that we could look at in spending and in need, and I could discuss that with you at the appropriate time. One of the things that I'd like to point out, though, is that with the appropriations that that you would provide any of the boards in, through the Special Revenue Fund. What it does is offer the boards that discretion. It doesn't mean that money would be spent, and any money that is determined not to be a business need during the course of the biennium would remain then in the reserve in the Special Revenue Fund. So what we would anticipate is, these requests, if not needed, that they would remain in the board reserve.
That's true for, like, the... rulemaking ones too, the requests.
That's correct.
Those have been appropriated in the past, is my understanding, and haven't occurred yet. It stayed in the fund, and there's a potential for.
That's correct. And last year, the legislature determined that the boards would be able to maintain a reserve of up to 1 year's budget in order to. Maintain their business needs and have a reserve in the event that there were unexpected events.
And then I need to make one clarifying thing that will apply through this. There will be a lot of reference to the Special Revenue Fund and what we're actually talking about. There's two Special Revenue Funds, and this one is the State Government Special Revenue, which is a little different than the Special Revenue Fund, but just need to make sure that people understand that if they care to. It's a bit esoteric, but it is. It is the case. We're talking about the State Government Special Revenue Fund.
Representative Lee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And sorry if I missed this, but on that line, that's the increase for salaries. What was the percentage increase, or how did you arrive at that number?
Well, my memory betrays me at this point in time, Representative Liebling. So I believe that at the time we were looking at, Ms. Vegnas, was it a 3.5%, 2.5% increase that we anticipated? And so that was what those projections were done, and those were done back in the fall.
Okay, so, Mr. Chair, if I may. So it sounds like you'd rather have that one than the one that's in the House budget.
Well, if I had to choose, Mr. Chair, Representative Leaving, yes, that's correct.
You'd prefer 3.5% to 1%?
It's fair to say. So, Mr. Chair, and then also, and I probably should have asked this of Dr. Spicer as well, but could you just remind us, and maybe other testifiers could as you go through, of how many people are regulated by your board? It would be helpful to sort of look at these and to compare one to the other, because obviously there are vast differences.
Mr. Chair, Representative Liebling, the Board of Dentistry regulates over 17,000 dental professionals. That includes dentists, dental therapists, dental hygienists, and dental assistants. Beginning January 1st of this year, we began registering dental laboratories that provided services to Minnesota patients. And right now, we've registered over 150 dental laboratories to date, but that's our task, I guess, is regulating those dental professionals on behalf of the public.
Thank you.
Then to continue, our third request has to do with computer service database upgrades. And essentially, we have a database called GL Suite that we utilize, and they have an annual participation and license requirement that varies anywhere from $25,000 to $55,000 a year, depending upon the type of service and the amount of service that you get. What we had originally budgeted was for a mid-level service agreement with them, but what we find is that during the course of the year, we have enough projects to upgrade our system and to modify it that we would benefit financially from purchasing the higher level. And so that's what this request does. I think the costs actually would be less to the board than for the additional projects that we need based on the mid-level service agreement. The next item is computer rotation, and we have laptops that we've issued to our board members and to our staff members that are now on the eight-year lifespan, and typically we're advised to rotate laptop computers every 3 years in order to be able to maintain them appropriately. So what we want to do is start a rotation that would enable us to do that. So we would stagger those purchases over the course of 3 years, and so not everybody's computers would be going out at once as they are now. The next is professional technical services. These are arrangements that we make with specialists to help review complex cases. And in this case, we anticipate that we would need an additional $10,000 per year in order to continue with getting that advice on those complex cases, which also provides us with the expenses that we need for contested cases when we need expert testimony. Finally is workspace maintenance. We've been in our office and had one renovation to our office, which was approximately 8 years ago, and have not painted or upgraded or updated anything since that time. And we just need a one-time allocation for doing some touch-ups on our space, which is pretty ragged at this point. So I guess I'd like to take any questions on the dental part, and then I can address the health professional services program.
Any questions? Let's jump in.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Then, as you indicated, the health professional services program is a program that is funded and serves all of the health licensing boards and some areas within the Department of Health. What it does is When a healthcare provider may have an impairment, they guide them into an assessment and determine if they have an illness that might require monitoring, and if so, they manage the monitoring of those health professionals to make sure that they are safe to practice. And at this point, the caseloads for the HPSP case managers are about 20% higher than they should be. And HPSP is requesting with this supplemental request is the funding of an additional case manager to help reduce that load to get it back into more appropriate levels. And also a part-time individual to help with clerical support so that the case managers can work more on their cases than on the clerical issues that that otherwise they're involved with.
So, Mr. Schrag, in the sheet it says full-time.
You're correct, Mr. Chair. I'm looking at a note that says that HPSB laid off a six-tenth person and was not able to fill another 0.64 FTA that was vacated during the course of the year. So their need is for a full-time person.
Okay. Senator Sharon?
Yes, I wanted to make sure I understood what you said about health professional service program. Did I hear you say that this is like a hub that all of the health boards use in terms of providing support for impaired professionals?
That's correct. It's a shared program. Sure. And it's not a independent state agency, and as a result of that, it needs to have one of the health licensing boards act as the administering board, and the Board of Dentistry has been doing that for the last several years.
Okay, thank you. And so does that mean then that each board is assessed a share of the costs of this program?
Mr. Chair, Senator Sharon, that is correct. The HPSB has a kind of an ante that each board pays in of a couple thousand dollars each year to be part of that, and then they are assessed according to the utilization of licensees or applicants through for their particular boards.
And then my final question would
Senator
be, I also thought I heard you say that this increased need is related to an increased demand for service, and I'm wondering if that means that there are more impaired professionals. Is that what that means? And if so, what's that about? Can you help us understand why the problem is
sure.
increasing?
Mr. Chair, Senator Sharon, whether it's an increased number of impaired professionals or a greater awareness of the impact that an impaired professional has on the care that they can provide, that I'm not sure of. But the caseload is higher. They indicate it's more complex. And I think the numbers of participants is growing. We've expanded the number of boards that are involved in that, and so the number of referrals from each board has increased.
I'm sorry. I'm just I think maybe we can look at this further at another time. I'd like to maybe look at this at a policy level.
Yep.
You know, there have been recent concerns about transparency, and are these self-referred persons, or are these persons that might be as a part of a complaint process to the board referred to these programs? I'll stop with just those two questions, but then maybe at another time I'd like to understand better what's happening in this arena of whether or not we are intervening on behalf of the public's interest in making certain that that impaired persons in all of these professions are that there's intervention and protection for the public.
I'll note in the pages that were provided on page 11 within the Board of Dentistry, it notes a 24% increase in the caseload since 2005. So, to your point, it has been growing. And I'll let Mr. Schrag answer as to, I believe it's a self-reported.
Mr. Chair, Senator Sharon, I do very much appreciate the questions. Monica Feider, who is the program director, unfortunately is ill today and not able to be here, so she would be the expert to answer the questions. But what I can tell you is that their caseloads are a combination of self-referrals, of third-party referrals, and of referrals from the boards. The boards refer individuals to HPSB either by a confidential referral that basically requires them to comply, or they would be reported to the board, or as a course of discipline where that they'd be required to do that as part of a disciplinary order.
Thank you. We don't need to take time today for this. I understand the reason for the request for the increase, but I'm glad this has sort of emerged. I'll put it on my list of things to take a look at more closely.
Mr. Chair, Senator Sharon, I'll be sure to have Ms. Feider schedule a time with you so that we can get you better background on that, or with the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Schrag. Any further questions? Okay. And then I believe the Board of Nursing Home Administrators has the other piece with the Administrative Services Unit that is board-wide in its application. Welcome to the committee. State your name for the record.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I'm Randy Snyder. I'm the Executive Director for the Minnesota Board of Nursing Home Administrators, which is a part-time position, and also the Executive Director for the Minnesota Board of Optometry. And in my spare time, we coordinate the work of the Administrative Services Unit, which is the back office for all the health licensing boards and three general funded boards as well. We are co-located, 18 boards together, working efficiently to do all the back office functions as effectively as we can, keeping the subject matter experts in front of the public and working directly with the licensees. With me is Julie Vagsness. She is our CFO, if you will. She's the brains behind all things financial for us. And essentially that is it as far as ASU goes. If you'd like more information on that, it seems like we spent hours on this at sunset. So I'll do a condensed or a long version depending on what your questions might be.
We don't want to do the whole sunset thing again. That was gone.
if there are questions, though, Mr. Chair, I'll be happy to answer them.
But Mr. Snyder, you mentioned three general fund boards. I know of EMSRB. Real quick, what are the other?
The Board of Barbers and the Board of Cosmetologists are also with us, co-located, and we work on those.
Barbers and cosmetologists. Okay. And where are the tattoo artists? Are they here?
Soon to be. Yeah.
Is that okay? Representative Abler.
Yeah. So they're the Department of Health, aren't they? The tattoo. Okay. Sorry, it's a gross misdemeanor. The governor didn't pick up a lot of these requests, and I don't really understand why the governors don't seem to pick up these requests. And so maybe the witnesses can also comment on what the governor picked up and what they didn't pick up. I see in your ASU there's a bunch of retirement and pension things and so on. And those are some big numbers. And so if you could just say the governor picked these up and then just in just very short commentary on the size of all that.
Ms. Bagness?
Mr.
Welcome
Chair,
to the committee. State
your
name for the record.
My name is Julie Vangsness, and I'm the accounting coordinator for all the health boards. I'm here to speak on behalf of the requests under the Administrative Services Unit, and none of these requests that we're asking for today were included in the governor's bill. These were all submitted, and they seem to be kind of a small issue or not. They just didn't make it. To start with the Administrative Services Unit, we have four different change item requests that we're here to talk to you today about. The first one is our combined retirement request. This request will cover approximately 16 possible retiring state employees that have been with the health boards for many years. The payoff of these boards will be a combination of their severance pay and their vacation payout. Typically, over the last several years, we've come forth with one request as opposed to submitting one for each of the boards. In this case, we've got about seven different boards involved in it, and this way we didn't have to submit seven different requests to cover all of the retiring costs. Our second request is to increase the base budget for the Administrative Services Unit by $41,000. The last time that our base budget was increased was in 2010. This increase will cover negotiated rent increases for our office space, a security guard service that will allow the boards to have a security guard in the building a few hours a week when needed, our state car, some training for our staff within the Administrative Services Unit, some office supplies for our copy room, and then we also included some salary and fringe benefit increases, not anticipating that there was a request included on the House side. Right. So this was prior to that. And then we usually tried to bring in, during the summer is one of our busy times, and when we do have funds available, we hire a student worker for about 6 to 8 weeks, and so this would also include some of that in that request. Our third request is a request for IT costs, and it is to fund one full-time IT staff person. Also, our shared equipment and the maintenance of that equipment. The Administrative Services Unit currently has two full-time IT staff. It's a network administrator and a developer who now, after the minute conversion, is also our IT manager. Both of these staff have been transferred to Minute over the last 2 years. And along with that, we had funded several years ago a student worker to assist with our help desk support, and we no longer have funds to continue that student worker position. So this request is including a full-time position that would handle all of our help desk support within all 18 of our health boards that are with us in our building. The other part of the request is to also fund the maintaining and replacing of our shared equipment. That consists of our servers, our firewall, our backup services, and licensing software equipment. Right now, the administrative services unit, we have like one shared computer center where all of our IT staff work with all of the data and ensuring that we have secure networks. And so that would, we've never really had a budget for our IT, and we've just used either funds at the end of a biennium if we had anything available. We also have a special revenue fund where we are able to collect funds from the three general funded agencies, EMSRB, the Board of Barbers, and the Board of Cosmetology. And that fund has kind of been depleted over time without any of the other increases in the costs still there. Our fourth and final request is to have some funds reappropriated for a disciplinary, regulatory licensing, and information management system. During the 2012 and 13 session, ASU received the appropriation for this project. The health-related board submitted the information about a year and a half ago to OET at the time, which our request at that time was kind of put on the on a hold, and through working through the Sunset Commission and working with the Department of Administration and Minute, we've been now asked or given the approval to somewhat move forward on different options for the boards in updating some of our back office systems. And the request is to reappropriate these dollars because on June 30th, anything not used will be canceled back to our fund balance. And so it's a reappropriation of those base dollars. I thank you for the opportunity today, and I stand for questions.
Senator Hayden.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'm sorry, I missed your name as I was floating through there.
It's Julie Vangsness.
Vangsness. When was the last time that you got an increase?
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, our last base budget increase was in 2010.
And so do you anticipate that you get them kind of every biennium? Or I'm just trying to get a sense because it almost feels like without kind of knowing your history, it sounds like there's a lot of pent-up demand in your organization. And so I'm just trying to get a sense of has the rate, the amount of increases that you've needed over the years, have they been, have the legislature appropriated that, or is this kind of pent-up demand that you're hoping to get most of that this year?
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, prior to probably 6 years ago, we were getting like little small increases each year to keep up with just the, I guess, the cost increases of doing business. And since 2010, we haven't received anything. So the $41,000 request is part of that, just to keep up with where we are today in paying for those costs. The new things, which would be the IT request, which would also include the new position, that would be something new and something ongoing that the boards, I just find a huge need for in maintaining our computer systems. And the IT, the system money for the disciplinary licensing system, that would just be a one-time request, so that one would not be ongoing.
So, and Mr. Chair, so you didn't get an increase last year?
Correct, for the base budget of the ASU operations.
Okay, and Mr. Chair, I just think that that's something that as we walk through this process that we should probably be mindful of is there was a lot of cuts in the last biennium. And so I recognize as folks are going to come in front of us that they need this money, they need this appropriation, but I think it needs to be noted. That because there's been a lot of talk about our targets and the tough road that we have to figure out here. But what I haven't heard as much of is how much we cut in the last biennium and how we didn't do some of the work that we needed to have done. And And I just think that that's important to say. We got to figure out what we need to do here. But I think that there is a lot of pent-up demand, and there was also a lot of cutting that was done in the last biennium that needs to be noted as we walk through this. I don't know if we can do everything in one biennium, but I think it's important for us to be mindful of that. Thank you. Thank you.
Representative Abler?
Mr. Chair, I just was asking one of the EDs. I think, at least in our bill last time, that we funded the request that they came forward with. I don't know if ASU had a request, but it's a separate pot of money. And so in the past, actually, that money has been raided, and we didn't do that. In 2 years ago, but these groups are pretty respectful with the money, and that's why I try to support what they. So I agree with you that we should look
after Mr. Chair, I mean, the Senator and Representative Abel, I don't want to just make you feel. I don't want you to be defensive about it because you had to do what you had to do when you were the chair last year. But I do think that personalities aside, that I think that we're going to kind of find this, even if it's not necessarily with this group. I think we need to be mindful of a lot of the targets you had 2 years ago and your colleagues and what you had to do. And I think we need to just kind of be mindful as we walk through this process. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Liebling, did you have a question?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'm a little different. First of all, I just wanted to understand the Administrative Services Unit, a couple questions. One, is this also coming out of Special Revenue Fund, so this is all fee-based? And then secondly, if you could just, I know you cover the back office for all the boards, I got that, but how many people are we talking about here? If you could just give us a sense of the scale, because you, obviously your numbers are a little bigger than the individual boards. And then I have another question about the retirement line, so if we could get that, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chair, Representative Liebling, we do the same sort of pro forma for based on our budgets to fund ASU. So all of the money is indirect underneath the line, and we pay a pro forma all 18 boards that go to ASU to fund that. So those are all funds that we manage, that we coordinate and argue about what that formulary should be, just like you all do.
And they are all special state.
They are all special revenue funds. So there are these three boards that we have a supplement that comes in and provides direct funding using that same formulary as well. And you had a second part.
And how many altogether?
How
many regulated persons are underneath? So you're covering everybody. So how many you can kind of ballpark?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, Representative Levy, there are 183,000 licensees in, or no.
274,000.
There's a bunch. No. I only know my own specific. For nursing home administrators, 854. I think it's slightly under 300,000 total licensees that are health-related in the state of Minnesota.
So, Mr. And Chair.
Representative Liebling?
Oh, I'm sorry. You were going to say something.
I was just going to say, excuse me, Mr. Chair, Representative Liebling, 4.6 FTEs. You had asked that as well for ASU. Of those 4.6, one is a chief financial officer, one is a purchasing contract, one is HR, and one is accounts payable. And it's strictly that accounting, the financial aspect and HR aspect and contracting that is provided there. And then 0.6 clerical.
Okay, so
Representative Liebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So we're talking about the back office here for the licensing activities for about 300,000 people. So we're talking about a lot of folks who are being regulated here under these boards. And so my other question had to do with the retirement line. And I was just curious that the severance and vacation payout and all that is being collected here to be appropriated separately under ASU. And I understand that what you said about not coming in with lots of requests, but what I'm really wondering is when somebody's hired by one of the boards, is there no, whether this cost isn't part of the salary that, you know, isn't that usually the way this is done, that you're setting, you know, you've got X amount of severance or certainly the vacation, for example, is just a line underneath the salary of that employee. So I'm kind of curious about why when they're ready to retire, suddenly we've got to appropriate a whole new bunch of money to cover that.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, What happens is when an employee is retiring, let's just take one that's been with the state for 25 years, and we have a lot of long-term employees within our health boards. They get a severance package, and that is paying off their sick bank hours that they've saved over all the years of working for the state. And depending upon their bargaining unit, it could be paid off at 40% or 35% of whatever hours are in there. And then most of the bargaining units also pay up to 275 or 260 hours of sick hours. And those are done as a lump sum payoff after the employee retires. And so there's no way to cover that within, or we've been unable to cover or fund that, because we might have a board with two employees, and there may not be a retirement for 12 or 14 years. And instead of having that budget inflated for all of those years, we've been asking for the funding in the year that the employee, or the year that we anticipate the employee to retire. What's included in their salary dollars within the normal budget would just be their salary, and if they use sick or vacation, it's just their base salary.
Mr. Chair, Representative Liebling, we don't do an accrued benefits that stays within our annual spending plan. This is spending authority to take that lump sum payment, or else we would have to reduce the board's budgets by $16,000 or $20,000 to fund that individual occurrence. It's a different accounting model. Trust us, it works, but it is, it's really not a business model, because we don't accrue the sick and benefits directly to that direct expense on an annual budget and ask funding for it. We wait until they retire, and then we ask for it, or else we'd face a reduction in that exact amount, if that makes sense.
Well, and Mr. Chair, if I may.
Representative Liebling.
Thank you. And that's kind of exactly what I'm getting at. So it kind of understates the board's budgets, because you're not counting that. And I just wonder, you know, I don't have any problem. I'm not going after the employees and what they deserve and what they've earned. That's not my concern at all. It's more about how it's accounted for, because you get to the end here, and now I assume because of the age wave, we've got a lot of retirements coming. And just like we have the same kind of problem in our pension funds, and all of a sudden you've got a lot of accrued stuff that you haven't accounted for all the way along. And I don't know. This is not my area of expertise, but it just strikes me that it's an interesting way of doing things. And if we've got the money in the fund, great. If we didn't, we'd be in a lot of trouble.
Representative Liebling, we did have some of the same questions, and we worked with MMB, and they did confirm that this is the manner in which it's been done before. The alternative to doing it in this manner, I think, is what Mr. Snyder was saying, is that we would have to inflate the costs of these boards that might have two employees for the entire, and it might be 10, 15 years before they encounter a retirement. And, you know, who knows what they'd do with that inflated cost over that period, too. It probably wouldn't be set aside. It just works better administratively to keep the board's salary, you know, allocation fairly lean throughout the period when these very small entities are stable, and then fund it through the one consolidated administrative services unit. It's the way we've done it in the past is what we've heard from MMB, and that it does kind of work. But it does raise these questions. It makes us ask questions every time we do it, and that's good. I mean, we should be open and accountable about how we approach things, but we did ask those same questions.
All right.
Ms. Bagnsness?
Mr. Chair and members, one thing to keep in mind, too, is our dollars are appropriated for a two-year cycle, and at the end of 2 years, anything not spent gets canceled back down to the fund balance. So we would be unable to save for a retirement in the future.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. And yeah, I'm sorry to take committee time with something that other people already have looked at.
No, that's fine.
And, you know, but I appreciate that. I appreciate knowing that it's been looked at. And thank you.
Okay. Any other questions of members? Senator Sharon.
It's not a question as much as a note that I'm sort of this. It's not related to the funding of the benefits, but the continuing competence rulemaking. I'm just noting that progress with the rulemaking has been slow for some reason. You might want to help me understand that. So you're really wanting the appropriation to be moved forward for that purpose, and which is fine. I mean, it wasn't spent, so now you'd like to spend it in the future. But I'm noting, and I just would mention this to everybody, that they have performance measures to reduce violations for supervision, direction, and delegation issues. And ethics violations in the part of the plan is to increase, looks like, some continuing education in the area of ethics. And so this in line with the other question I had earlier about impaired professionals, it just concerns me that I'm glad that you're focusing on this. Just wondering what drives this. It creates anxiety for me in terms of protections for the public. Ms. I don't know Snyder? If you want to comment on that or not.
Mr. Chair, Senator Sharon, I'll just talk about rulemaking as a process. We have to get the statute changes. And for our board is looking, the Nursing Home Administrators Board is looking at national issues that are emerging. And we probably may not even get to rulemaking in this session. I have to be totally honest. This is a placeholder budget that if we get to it, we want the ability to move forward quickly. If we don't get to it, we're not going to proceed, and that's true with optometry as well. There are a couple of national emerging issues that we will most likely come back in 14 to you and then hopefully be able to complete the rulemaking yet in this biennium. But it's a placeholder budget. If the opportunity allows itself to move forward rapidly in rulemaking, we want to get it done. It cancels back if we don't use it. It's really allowing us the privilege to move forward quicker than to wait until the next budget process, and that's my comment on that.
And my understanding, correct me if I'm wrong as well, about each of these rulemaking appropriations is that they're sufficient to go through a rulemaking process that is actually rather controversial and receives a lot of public feedback and has to go through an Office of Administrative Hearings set of requests and the full-blown pushback and give and take in a rather extensive rulemaking. It's not known that any rulemaking that you would undertake would incur all of those costs either. That they might be rather well received and go rather smoothly. And if so, the spending would be less and the appropriation would just revert back to the state government special revenue fund. But in order to be able to accommodate that more extensive rulemaking authority we have built into here, the appropriation that allows them to respond to whatever comes back from the public when the notice of proposed rulemaking is published. Senator Sharon,
if you would indulge me, I just know that if these boards don't manage their own professions. You know, we're talking in here about continuing education, competence rules, reduction of violations for supervision, direction, 25% reduction in ethics violations. That if the boards aren't, not just your board, but all the boards aren't effective in this, then it comes back to us and we start looking at mandates and government interference, so to speak. So I hope that that's a... it's being done, and that we become more transparent in understanding how that's being done to protect the public. Because I think it's a preferred approach to do it through the professional licensing boards rather than legislatively.
Okay. Any other questions of members? I think that we've now covered all of the boards that have board-wide application, the HPSP and the Administrative Services Unit, and then... So maybe we'll go to the boards that just have specific requests for themselves. I think somebody's here from Marriage and Family Therapy.
Oh, that's my first.
Be welcome to the Mr. Snyder. Did you have?
And Mr. Chair, just to clarify, then I've covered nursing home administrators as far as
yes.
Rules and optometry, and
yep.
We're good to go. Thank you,
yep.
Sir.
Thank you, Mr. Snyder. Welcome to the committee. State your name for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm Jennifer Mollenhoff. I'm the director of the board of Marriage and Family Therapy. I have three change item proposals before you. My documents are found on pages 15 to 19 of the larger change item package that you have in front of you. Very briefly, the first of my three provisions is rulemaking. Again, as we've touched upon, it's a continuation of a prior appropriation. I'm slightly different from nursing home and the optometry board in that I am our board is very close to completing our rulemaking process and hope to move through the entire process sometime in the next 10 to 12 months, depending upon a lot of different factors. And again, as you referenced, Senator Lurie, our request is for $25,000. Obviously, you would only expend costs that were necessary, and it is absolutely our hope that we don't have to spend a lot of costs because everybody wildly supports all of our proposed revisions, and we speed through the process very quickly. So fingers crossed on that.
Wildly.
Our other two provisions do relate to staffing. The Board of Marriage and Family Therapy is currently staffed at 1.6 FTEs. That is essentially unchanged since the board was created in 1989. So there's been only a 0.1 increase in staffing from 1989 to the present day. I am not a full-time executive director funded position. My materials reference a little bit of our numbers in terms of licensees. We doubled the number of regulated individuals in about a 10-year period. So if you look at 2000 to 2010, the number of individuals regulated by the Board of Marriage and Family Therapy doubled. We sit here today with approximately 2,300 regulated individuals. That includes licensed marriage and family therapists, licensed associate therapists, and right now approximately 400 applicants for licensure. So those numbers fluctuate daily, but we are right around 2,300 regulated individuals that are overseen, as I said, right now today with 1.6 staffing positions. So the other two requests for this board relate to the executive director position. That's a funding request to move the executive director from a 0.6 funded position to a full-time director position. The other funding request relates to an additional 0.5 licensure staff. This would be an individual that would assist with all aspects of licensing, renewal, and then regulatory oversight. So essentially it's a change from a 1.6 funded FTE for the board to 2.5 FTEs. And with that, I stand for any questions that the committee may have.
Any questions of the members? You know, seeing none, I have one. I remember Dr. Spicer had mentioned that some of the boards might need an increase in 2017, but I don't know if we discovered who it would be. Was it your board that would need?
Senator Lurie, no. I mean, at this point, we've done projections out through the next two full bienniums.
Okay.
With the assistance of Ms. Banksness, we've looked beyond that. I do not anticipate a fee increase. And in fact, and I thank you, I should also point out that I have non-fiscal provisions. I forgot for a moment. But in Article 10 of the Senate's omnibus bill, I am a board that also has put forward a fee decrease for certain fees charged by the board. So in looking at the long-term financial situation of marriage and family therapy, again, I do have a budget increase request, but I also have in front of the committee a decrease in three specific fees that we charge to our licensees, and our financial projections show that we can both decrease certain fees and increase the biennial appropriation and still remain in a status where, like I said, at least 4 to 6 years out, I don't see there being any need for a projected fee increase.
Excellent.
Okay.
Thank you very much. Representative Liebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I just I thought I saw in here that there was an across-the-board increase, salary increase, or, you know, and I just wanted, since we have in the House provision the 1% across the board. I assume that that affects your board and that you have in your own budget here a separate increase? As we talked about with the Board of Dentistry, am I wrong about that?
Senator Lori and Representative Lee, you are correct that in the House version of that in the House omnibus bill there was an across the board small increase. I believe it's been referred to as a 1% increase. And you are correct, like other boards, the change item provisions were drafted without knowledge of that 1%. So essentially those dollar amounts, however it ultimately comes out, would go towards funding, staffing, or whatever. But they weren't taken into account when the dollars that you see in front of you on the change item were calculated. So at some point, you're correct, those dollars will have to be reviewed and determined. So, yeah, does that make sense?
All right. Any other questions for Ms. Mollenhoff? All right. Next on my list would be the Board of Physical Therapy. Welcome to the committee. State your name for the record.
My name is Stephanie Lunning. I'm the Executive Director for the Board of Physical Therapy. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I have one increase, and it is for rulemaking. It's found on page 32. Some of the things that were asked, we have about 6,200 licensees regulated by the Board of Physical Therapy, three FTEs. Currently, this is not a request for an increase in FTEs. Our fees are $60 per year for annual license. That fee has not changed since 1994, I believe, under the Board of Medical Practice, and we do not anticipate any increase in that fee in the foreseeable future with Ms. Vangsness' help projecting out a number of budget cycles. We don't see a need that we're going to be coming back and asking for that. We are into the rulemaking process. We've proposed, we've put it past the governor and have a governor's tracking on it, but we have a lot of the nuts and bolts of actually going through the process. Our continued competency rule does come out of some of the discipline cases that we've seen, and we're hoping to reduce those through education. One of the proposals in the rule would require a jurisprudence test where it would be open book, low stakes, no fee, but that we would have part of the law that everybody would have to read before they renew their license and answer three or four questions. That then we would know they've read it, they can redo it as many times as it takes to get it right. So, we aren't going to keep people from renewing, but at least then every year we know that we can get people to read their practice act. The same sort of thing on the ethics requirement that a number of our discipline and complaint cases have had ethics components in it, and so the new rule would propose that everybody in their two-year continued competency cycle would complete a two-hour ethics course.
These are just what would be in your rulemaking.
So, I was trying to address some of the questions of where we're coming. Our current continued competency rules are really continuing ed rules based and written over 20 years ago when people went to a classroom and sat in a course pretty much, and that was it. And we're hoping to make it have more more weight than, more rigor than the previous version. So, the amount requested is the amount taken from, I think it's Department of Admin's rulemaking manual for what they called a simple rule. Was the $44,000, but we're hoping ours will be more simple than that with less controversy.
You said you've already started your rulemaking, so you have a notice of proposed rulemaking published?
We have a draft that we've worked with the revisor's office, but we haven't put out the notice yet. We've gotten approval of the governor, so we're at that. We've been working on the idea.
Okay.
But we have to really start the full process.
Okay. Good. Any questions of members? Okay. Seeing none, thank you very much for your testimony. I think I have the Board of Psychology next. If there's Ms. Bangsness is going to do that again, it looks like. And just so people know my list, if I'm surprising them, I don't know, my list goes social work, veterinary medicine, behavioral health, therapy next.
I was just going to say.
I think we did. Didn't I think?
We did.
Mr. Snyder covered optometry, correct? Yep. And then the Board of Pharmacy, I know we carried in our omnibus bill already in the, on the Senate side, so I don't know if we needed to hear from them today. If the House wanted to, we certainly can. But Ms. Bangsness, welcome back.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, the Executive Director for the Board of Psychology is unable to be here today, so I will briefly speak on behalf of what their request is. They have one request, and it is to fund an educational program. They licensed about 3,800 licensees, and they are in the process, after just completing their rulemaking process, to develop an educational program for to provide additional support to supervise training program, rules of conduct in training sessions and educational outreach, including pamphlets, accessible training material, post-test information, and have an educational opportunities within the board. They also want to do some site visits to the doctoral programs for training sessions on ethics and electronic distribution of different training material. Their request is a permanent increase to their base budget of $60,000, and I stand for questions.
Thank you, Ms. Bagnes. Any questions of members? All right. Thank you very much for that. I got some nods that folks would like to hear from the Board of Pharmacy. I believe Mr. Weiberg. Oh, there he is. I couldn't. Mr. Weiberg, welcome to the committee.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm Dr. Cody Weiberg, the Executive Director of the Board of Pharmacy. And I'm actually really glad I get to testify today. That's not always the case because I live in Red Wing. And knowing what the weather was going to be like, I actually stayed in a hotel in Woodbury yesterday so I could be here at 8 a.m. just to testify. So I'm glad to be able to be up here, actually. To answer some of the general questions that have been asked of the boards, the Board of Pharmacy, we actually have these. I looked on our website. We keep the statistics on the website. As of March of this year, we directly register or license 23,250 individuals and businesses. Like the Board of Dentistry, we are one of the boards that actually regulates businesses. That's actually a very significant portion of what we do. I want to point out that that is an increase of 35% in the number of licenses we've issued since 2007 when I started with the board, and that ties into some of our fiscal requests and some of the other questions that were asked. We currently have 15 FTEs. We'll be asking for two FTEs, and I'll explain that in a bit. The number of FTEs we've had has increased from 10 when I started to 15. Two of those were added by the legislature directly to handle our prescription monitoring program. One was an additional pharmacy surveyor or inspector, because the number of businesses in the state that we've licensed has increased by several hundred since I've started. And we have two new office staff because of that increase in 35% in the licenses that we issue. And even though we're automating things, we have more than enough work for those that office staff to do. I think the focus on the other boards today has been on fiscal issues. I need to talk at least slightly about the policy issues that are in the Senate bill today, because the fiscal and the policy portions are interrelated. We are asking for two FTEs. Those FTEs would be to hire an additional inspector and to hire an additional pharmacist that additional pharmacist will do two things. He'll take over some of the duties that the chief inspector is now doing so she can get back on the road and do more inspections. and we'll also then do some policy work that we've been asked to work on. In addition to the policy issues in this bill, we're working with the Department of Human Services on the methadone issue that's been before your committees. We're working with the Pollution Control Agency on pharmaceutical waste issues, and I won't go on, but there's about eight different major policy issues we're working on, and there's one of me to work on policy issues. And so the new pharmacist is going to free up the time so the current inspectors can do more inspections and then also do some of the policy work we've been asked to do. In regards to the policy issues in the bill, the original Board of Pharmacy policy bill had some minor components, but there were two major components. One dealt with licensing, and that specifically arises because of the compounding disaster that most of you probably are aware of. Last October, an entity that was licensed by us only as a pharmacy was illegally shipping drugs into the state that were contaminated with a fungus, and these were injectable drugs. Nationwide, over 700 people developed severe infections. Over 50 died. In Minnesota, no deaths, but 11 Minnesotans came down with severe fungal infections. So the licensing provisions that are in both bills are critical so that we can better regulate these out-of-state facilities that ship drugs into the state. And one of the things that we're going to do, and this is why we require these FTEs, is we're going to insist that these facilities send in their inspection reports, and if they haven't been inspected by the state they're located in or by the Food and Drug Administration, that they're inspected by an agent of the board. And our surveyors are actually going to go through all of those inspection reports, identify any major deficiencies, send follow-up letters to these facilities so that we can get assurance that they have corrected those deficiencies before we will license them. And that alone could take up an entire FTE just to do those inspections. We license well over 1,000 out-of-state facilities currently, and that number keeps growing constantly. The other major portion we had was the prescription monitoring program provisions. I don't think I'm going to talk about that right now because that doesn't tie in directly with the fiscal impact.
Okay. Oh, and look who shows up. But we're not going to talk about it, Cody just said, Mr. Weinberg just said. So
Mr. Chair, not at this point.
Right this minute because it's not part of the board's request at this part of the health-related licensing board's requests. So other questions from members? Seeing none, we'll move on to the Board of Social Work.
Mr. Chair? Well, they're coming.
Representative Abler.
You know, we're hearing from the EDs of the boards. Every one of these groups has a trade association that's connected to it, and maybe not now, but I'm sure they're all really happy with their boards, but sometimes they're not, I know. So they might think there may be some voice that they'd have that they would rather see some changes than we're going to approve. So they should at least feel free to talk to us. Not today, necessarily, unless you want to do that.
Well, I mean, it's probably going to have to be today. What I'll do is at the end, hopefully we'll have some time. We'll hear from these last couple of boards. I'll open it up for public testimony. Yeah. If members have questions, if they've heard from the licensed individuals, or if there's representatives here that have of those groups that have issues with some of these requests, I have not personally received, to the best of my knowledge, a great deal of pushback on any of these requests. But you make a very good point.
Well, me either. I just thought I'd offer that.
We would open it up
because I tend to trust what the boards are doing, hoping their internal dialogue works, and it usually does. So, but anyway, it's going so smoothly. I didn't want it to.
And we did. We did publish notice that we would be covering the health related boards today. So, hopefully, if there is discomfort somewhere among the community, they've shown up, and we will try to make sure that we get reserve some time for that public testimony. Mr. Weinberg.
Mr. Chair, there's one other general question you asked that I did not answer, and that is we're requesting a $210,000 increase in appropriations. We've done the math and the projections, and we will not have to have a fee increase for, we think, at least 6 years, and it may be longer.
All right. Well, soon maybe I'll find out which of these boards needs an increase in 2017. All right, the Board of Social Work. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you very much, Senator, and members of the committee. My name is Kate Zacher-Pate, and I'm the Executive Director of the Board of Social Work. And we so appreciate the opportunity to testify before you this morning. The information for our investment change item, I believe, is included in page 36 of your packet. And I'll give you some specific information about that investment change item request and try to answer some of the general questions as well. The board really believes that this particular request is very directly and positively connected to our core mission, to our policy, and being able to really achieve our core outcomes and our public safety function in Minnesota. We believe that we will be able to sustain this absolutely at this point in time without a fee increase. And according to projections, I would hope that we would not be looking at a fee increase for at least 4 years. So that is that information. To let you know, too, that the Board of Social Work has four separate and distinct licenses, from bachelor's level to independent clinical, which requires graduate degrees. We serve over 12,600 licensees currently, and that's just licensees. That is not counting applicants. That is not counting members of the public. It is not counting employers, educators. We serve quite a number of people. This particular change item is requesting an additional amount to our base budget in fiscal year 14 of $55,000, in fiscal year 15, $56,000. And the purpose behind this request is to increase our staff complement. As I will hopefully be able to convince you when I give you some data, the social work profession in Minnesota is growing. And there is an ever-increasing demand for us to meet the needs of the profession and of the citizens served by social workers. So again, going back to the specifics of the request, current staff complement is 10.6. This increase would bring our overall staff complement to 11.3. We are specifically requesting to resurrect a 0.6 FTE support position and increase our investigator senior position from a 0.8 position to a full-time FTE. Again, the primary driver of this request is really twofold. As it is described in the investment change item, it is particularly around the increase that we have seen in our complaints, which has been pretty significant. And I know that I testified in early January about that to this committee. It is something that we feel very strongly that we cannot ignore, and we need to be able to manage in a more effective way. The consequences of these increased complaints, which according to our data went up about 40% since 2008, the consequence is that because our staff complement to handle complaints has not changed in the last decade, our response time has not been quite as good as it has been, and we believe that it needs to be in order to really meet our core missions. And so again, the resolution time is increasing. We were able to respond to complaints and resolve 74% of our complaints in less than 6 months in approximately 2008. With the increased numbers of complaints, what we have found is that our response rate really has not been as good, and has moved to being able to reduce only 42% of complaints in 6 months. This is not the standard that the Board of Social Work is used to being able to deliver. And so we are coming to you today to ask for more tools to do our core public safety functions. And the tools that we need currently are increased FTEs. When I also, to go to some of the more general information, given our FTE complement compared to the number of licensees that we have, our staff-to-licensee ratio is approximately 1 FTE to 1,200 licensees. We believe that we really run a pretty lean operation. And again, that is just licensees. That is not applicants. We receive over 1,200 applications per month. No, wait, per year. We do 450 renewals every month. We really have pretty high volume. Again, a little bit of information in terms of our overall fee structure that was asked about as well. The Board of Social Work has been successful in reducing our fees by 30% since 2006 and maintaining at that level. The board very deliberately at that point moved to a cost of doing business model, rather than setting fees so that you sort of do a build-up and a spend-down. And so with that, we believe that our way of doing business is more transparent to our licensees, to all of our stakeholders, because our model is to really only have fees set at an amount that we wish, that we need to expend. Our fees also are, in the board's opinions, and we hear from licensees, pretty reasonable. Our fees for professional social work licenses range from $3.37 per month for our bachelor's license to $9.93 per month for our independent clinical license. So we think that we are doing a very good and responsible, running a good and responsible operation in terms of our fiscal management. The other thing I would just like to mention briefly that I think is an important piece of the puzzle, I spoke primarily about our complaints increasing and that really being sort of the primary driver for this investment change item request. What is also happening, when I mentioned earlier that our the profession in general is growing, a couple other pieces of data that I think the outcomes in the data is important for you to sort of get the full context. When we gathered information for the Sunset Report, in the last decade, from the year 2000 to 2010, overall, the board experienced a 43% increase in applications for licensing. We had an overall increase in 25% of all licenses granted and a 33% increase in license renewals, while our staff complement remained static. A quick snapshot, again, in terms of licensing activity, because this is also additional work, additional services that need to be provided. And what is important to know when I point this out is that, quite frankly, this is the revenue stream that will support this investment request. A snapshot of licensing activity for the first quarter of calendar year 2012, we were receiving 639 applications. Again, snapshot first quarter of 2013 calendar year, 809 applications, which is an increase of 27%. Again, over just this recent time period. And many of you who serve on the policy committee are also aware of the Board of Social Work initiative that we are so excited about, and that was to modify our current licensing exemptions with our grandfathering provision, which we are off to a pretty fast start. In terms of the applications that have been received since January of 13, 45% of those applications have been grandfathering applications. So again, that policy change has been really important. It is increasing the diversity, and again, we are really seeing an increased revenue stream. So again, the board really, really hopes that you would vote affirmatively on this request and that you can give us more tools so that we can better carry out our mission of public protection to the citizens.
Thank you, Ms. Zacherpate. Any questions of members? Representative Liebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and not to prolong this because I think, you know, frankly, this is appreciate your information, and it's a pretty small request given the scope of what you do and all of that. But at some other time, not now, I'd like to understand more about why you've got so many complaints and what that is about. It sounds to me like you could use more resources, frankly, but let's not discuss that now because I think we probably need to move on.
Thank you. Ms. Zacherpate, we will look forward to that conversation. Looks like Senator Sharon looks forward to it as well.
I do. You know, that was picking the theme up here, that yep. there is something that we need to understand. And if we aren't providing adequate supports, I prefer a response, taking care of the situation at the board level. But, you know, what's the nature of these problems? Are they taking advantage of people physically, or their boundary violations that, you know, we know that from recent news is part of the problem. So I hope it isn't mandating something legislative that we have to do in order to get this righted.
Senator Lurie, if I might.
Briefly.
Yes. when I testified in January, Representative Liebling, this very question came up from Senator Sharon. And what I did at that point in time is that I put together a memo that identified the number of causes for why we think this is occurring and delivered it at that time in January to Senator Sharon and Senator Lurie. So I do have that. I'd be more than happy as a starting point to perhaps send that out to all members of the conference committee. It's a very multifaceted prong, we believe.
Ms. Zacherpate, maybe you could do that.
Certainly.
Distribute it to all of the conferees. I think that could be very
and
helpful.
Very briefly, I don't want to lay this at the table of the social work board. I think I'm interested in this across all.
Right.
Boards.
No, I don't think anybody's saying that the health licensing boards aren't doing their job. I think we're all saying, you know, if there's issues within the professions, we need to understand where they're coming from and make sure that we have the proper oversight. And so I think this has been a very good discussion. Any further questions of members? Seeing none, we'll move on to the Board of Veterinary Medicine.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Welcome to the committee. State your name for the record.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Liebling.
Sorry, just before she gets started, I just do want to say that we've been asked to be on the floor at 10. I just wanted the chair to be aware.
So,
very fast.
Excellent.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Dr. Julia Wilson. I'm a veterinarian and the very new executive director of the Board of Veterinary Medicine.
Welcome.
We have a very simple, small change item request, and that is to have the spending authority to have a 0.5 FTE position added to our office of two. This would be an initial request for $40,000, of which $6,000 would go towards supporting the equipment, office change, increase in office space, and then a recurring cost for that individual, as well as a couple of other small things that are listed on page 39 of your packet for a recurring annual expense of $34,000. The reason this office is making this request is that we need to enhance our ability to respond speedily, similar to what you just heard from the Board of Social Work, because we, too, are seeing an increase in the number of complaints that we're getting in, particularly in the areas of professional competency, professional conduct, and unlicensed practice by individuals that are doing things like chiropractically adjusting horses and things of that sort. These complaints, as well as being more numerous, are also more complex, so they are requiring more action. So our hope is if this committee does approve the spending authority that we will be able to do our job more effectively, more quickly, and that will also hopefully free me up as executive director to work on further education of our licensees, particularly in some of the areas that have already been alluded to as problems with the other boards. So thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Wilson. Any questions of members? Representative Abel.
This kind of provoked my interest in the the joint chiropractic veterinarian work on animals. How's that going in general?
I think it's going extremely well.
Wilson.
Thank you.
Good. Sure.
There you go. Any other questions of members? Seeing none, we'll move on to the Board of Behavioral Health and Therapy. Ms. Vangsness, I understand you'll be presenting for this one as well. Welcome to the committee.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Julie Vangsness with the Health Licensing Boards. I'm here on behalf of the Board of Behavioral Health and Therapy. They've got one change item request, and it is for a full-time FTE position to assist in their licensing and complaint resolution process. This board has struggled for many, many years to bring in sufficient revenues to cover all of their expenses, and they have met that goal. They now are at a position where it's time to add staff so that they can quickly license and individuals quickly and also handle their complaint process. This is for a ongoing appropriation of $62,000. I stand for questions.
Okay.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Avery.
Just to give kudos to the board in absentia here, they had, like, I think, $1 million deficit when they started, when we created that board, I think in this room. And it's come a long ways, and just a tribute to their efforts to deal with alcohol, drug counselors, and the whole thing. It's going well. Thanks.
Great. Thank you for the presentation. Any other questions of members? Seeing none, we have the EMSRB. I believe we have Ms. Bilodeau. Welcome to the committee.
Mr. Chair and members, I'd like to make one quick comment on the setting or increasing fees by 2017. We don't have any boards that we are actually anticipating to increase those fees. We've done our projections out through 2017, and just dependent upon if 100% of the dollars are spent within the boards, and also if 100% of what we anticipate revenues to come in, we may have to revisit that at 2017, but I think all of the health licensing boards are sitting in a good position right now.
Oh, okay. Maybe I misunderstood that earlier comment. Thank you for the clarification. Ms. Bilodeau, welcome. And members, this one is the general fund, not the state government special revenue fund funded board that will be presenting today. Welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Pam Bilodeau. I serve as the executive director for the Emergency Medical Services Regulatory Board. And I'd like to thank you for your time and consideration of our seven change request items. That's on page 42 through 50 of your packet today. I would like to begin by just mentioning, putting into context these requests and then giving a very quick overview. The context, our budget has remained relatively the same, and increases for overhead and salaries have been mostly accommodated through attrition. And we have, over the last 8 years, been unable to fund those positions approximately 50% of the positions. We're at 11 FTEs currently. And in addition, to add to that, our responsibilities have increased, and that's added 24/7 emergency response to the State Emergency Operations Center and local responses. We have added investigations and development and management of the Minnesota State Ambulance Reporting System. With that, I'd like to give a quick overview of the seven items, and also mention that the board definitely understands that there's a lot of asks and that there's a lot of pressure on the legislators to accommodate. So we have prioritized. When I give the list, I'll give our top three priorities, and those top three priorities would total $294,000. In fiscal year 14 and $257,000 thereafter. The first change item is for $195,000, and that is for two FTEs, and all seven are for, or six of them are FTEs, and the others are to cover unemployment and retirements. And out of those six, it covers salaries, overhead, such as phone space and computers. That type of thing is also included in these numbers. The first one is for care improvements, data research manager, and that would cover two FTEs to support the role of EMS in overall health care outcomes for patients. The second request is $105,000. That's for a legal analyst, one FTE, supports investigations to reduce processing time. Our hope is that it will reduce it up to about 3 months. The third priority is $103,000. That's for an EMS education field coordinator. This request supports the board's responsibility to verify education programs are following the standardized process required by the board to measure the knowledge and competency of those that are staffing ambulances and certified personnel.
Ms. Bilodeau, you said that your first three would total $294,000. I'm tallying over $400,000.
$257,000, pardon?
$257,000 ongoing.
Oh, I'm sorry.
So the first,
so the priorities. I'm sorry. As I go through the seven, I'd like to identify the priorities. Why don't I, Mr. Chair, if it may help the committee if I do that first. I was trying to follow the list that the committee was looking at, but the three that the board supports as their priority are the legal analyst for $105,000. The second priority is the EMS education field coordinator that I was just mentioning, and the third request is for salaries and unemployment, and that was for $86,000.
Okay, that helps, Ms.
Bell. Okay, thank you, Mr. Chair. And the second priority is the third that you're looking at, and that's to, as I mentioned, to request verifying competency and skill. And this should help reduce inspections. Also, the field coordinator for education programs from a cycle of about six. Completing the cycle of inspections of 174 education programs from a six-year cycle down to approximately four. And the on-site evaluations for education programs for new education programs from approximately 6 months down to 1 month. The next change request item, the fourth one, is for a public information and research program coordinator. That's for proactive communications to improve efficiencies and desired compliance for public protection. I've heard quite a few questions about that. So we're looking for these positions to help proactively mitigate any regulation needed beforehand, before it occurs. The fifth is $111,000 for state medical director. That supports leadership for providing quality care, such as addressing drug shortages that you may have heard quite a bit about. And that's important because 65% of the ambulance services are nonprofit, and many of them are in greater Minnesota. They have a very high turnover rate with the ambulance managers. And, again, it's proactive, offering technical assistance to mitigate any compliance issues before they occur. And that is always good for public health. Thank you. And the sixth is salaries, unemployment, and retirements. These are for severance packages, as you've heard. It also is for covering continuing unemployment for a previous layoff that occurred in 2012 and federal unemployment extensions. The seventh one is $91,000 for an EMS grant manager. It's to cover the increased controls, monitoring grants, and ensure that the required 30-day payments are met. With that, I stand for questions. Thank you.
Ms. Bilodeau, now I know that the governor had something. The House, I believe, put the 1% base on. What did the governor recommend in his budget item for EMSRB? I think it was on the order of $130,000 or something like that, if I recall correctly.
There was no increase, just the base budget. I would like to defer, Mr. Chair, if you will, to Ms. Vagnas.
Ms. Fangsness?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, in the governor's budget, the EMSRB, the base budget was the only thing that was included. There were no other increases.
On our spreadsheet, we'll have to dig into that a little bit. On our spreadsheet, on the governor's column, there's $137,068 in the year 69 in the second year under EMSRB, unless I'm reading it incorrectly, but we'll dig into that a little bit.
Okay.
I guess.
I can work with Dennis.
So with that, any other questions of members? Okay, and we have a little bit of time to open it up. Anyone from the public care to testify either in support or opposition to any of the health-related licensing board proposals? Seeing none. We will recess until approximately 6 p.m. this evening. We'll take up the health licensing boards again just amongst members and have a little discussion. Maybe we'll be able to close up this discussion and then try to get to same and similar in Article 1, and we'll go from there. We stand in recess. A reminder to the public, nothing can be left in this room. No bags, no papers. We're going to clean it up. Members can leave their packets.
Small
It'll
children.
Go on the carts and be returned. We stand in recess.